Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Mr. Pop.
That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
47 years ago,
when in the course of human events,
and so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
There is not a black America and a white America and Latino America and Asian America. There's the United States of America.
Hello, I'm Mike Duncan, writer and producer of the History of Rome and Revolutions podcasts. George Washington, 1732 to 1799, was the first president of the United States, serving from 1789 to 1797. He was the commander-in-chief of the Continental Army during the American Revolutionary War and one of the founding fathers of the United States.
General, if you will please place your left hand on the Bible and raise your right hand. Repeat after me.
Friends.
I, George Washington,
fellow citizens,
solemnly swear.
The time for the election of a new citizen to administer the executive government is soon upon us. And the time has come for you to decide who will be clothed with that important trust.
The colonies around about the time of Washington's birth, so we're talking, you know, the 1720s. So you have three sort of blocks of colonies. You have up in New England, then middle colonies, which are Pennsylvania, New York, and then the southern colonies, Virginia, of those being the most important. You've gone through your first wave of the new immigrants getting the colony set up. So Washington is born into a society that is in many ways settled, sort of the old frontier fight for survival period of the colonies has passed. You have fairly major towns or cities, as we'd like to call them, which is, you know, Boston and Philadelphia and New York are starting to crop up. Down in Virginia, where Washington is from, you have these large settled landed estates. So Washington is born into a settled colonial situation.
So this is episode 2 of 10 American Presidents, and I've decided to do things a little bit differently. Instead of just going straight into a show, and the next show is going to be on George Washington, I've decided to have a little bit of a segue show where I speak to our narrator, kind of off mic, but kind of on mic at the same time, about your Facebook questions and also about topics and things about America. So I have with me Mike Duncan, a podcast that needs absolutely no introduction. He has kind of almost, he's almost one of the standard bearers of the history podcasting genre with his podcast, The History of Rome, and now is illuminating us on the French Revolution with his Revolutions podcast. Hello, Mike, how are you?
I am great. How are you?
Not too bad, sir. Not too bad. Now, we have some questions for you, Mike, from our Facebook group. And if you, dear listener, would like to send a question to a future narrator of 10 American Presidents, why don't you join our Facebook group, which is 10 American Presidents on Facebook. And then basically then you can pose any question that you like, as long as it's to do with America and its presidents. So first question is from Ian Watts, and he is really curious, Mike, to find out what Washington's beliefs were regarding slavery. Was he aware of the fundamental contradiction between the principles he was fighting for in the American Revolution and the institution of slavery itself, and the fact that he actually owned slaves?
I think the word that would that gets used the most in talking about George Washington and slavery is conflicted. George Washington was very conflicted about slavery. A lot of the guys who were in that Virginia aristocracy were conflicted about slavery. They recognized that holding humans in bondage was not the greatest thing to be doing morally. They didn't really like it as an institution, but they also were unable to see any other way to run their plantations and to run the economy of their home states without them. So Washington's evolution on slavery really goes from him being a young planter and inheriting slaves, just like everybody else around him does. He inherits these slaves. As he progresses, though, he sort of moves into this idea of, okay, I own these slaves. I expect them to do work for me. If they don't do work for me, you know, I can bring the hammer down on them. But I'm going to stop really buying and selling slaves, right? So he takes a step back once he hits middle age about he doesn't really want to buy slaves anymore. He doesn't want to engage in the actual traffic of human beings. Through most of his life, he's also pretty dedicated to the idea of not breaking up slave families, which is something that routinely would happen. So if one of his slaves married another one of his slaves, he wouldn't just sell off that slave and break up the family. He was opposed to that. But again, he continues to keep them all in bondage because he can't really see a way out of it. So it's like he knows in his heart that what he's doing is wrong, but on a practical level and on an economic level, it would kind of be too hard for him personally to give up all of these slaves. So he doesn't do it in his own lifetime. When he's writing up his will, however, he does, you know, put in the famous clause that he is going to free all of his slaves. And then, of course, he owned some slaves, and then Martha Washington's estate technically owned a bunch of other slaves. But the idea was that all of his slaves would be freed upon their death. So it progresses from him just accepting it as the norm to understanding that it's bad and wanting to do away with it, but really not personally being able to see any way to do it. And then, of course, as president or as commander of, you know, the Continental Army, he's not encouraging the idea of liberty for everyone, because he doesn't, you know, he doesn't think that it ought to extend to slaves, or at least it can't extend to slaves at that moment in history. So it's like there's a little bit of, you know, on the one hand, he is personally enlightened about it, but he never really does anything courageous necessarily to do anything about it, even though he knew full well that it was a complete contradiction between fighting this, you know, war for liberty while keeping slaves.
Second question from Adam von Hammond. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly, Adam. I'd be curious to know about his relationship with Adams, and was his opinion of the vice presidency as little as has been sometimes been portrayed?
Washington and Adams, there was not a lot of love between them. You know, Adams did famously, I think he was the one who formally proposed that George Washington be made commander-in-chief of all of the Continental Army in the early days of the war in 1775. But as the war progressed, Adams himself became less enamored with Washington and less impressed by Washington, and he did think that it was possible that Washington was doing a bad job running the war. He also thought that Washington, as sort of this figure, this symbol for the movement, that he couldn't just be dumped. But privately, in letters and then in talking to people around him in Congress and then back home in Massachusetts, you know, Adams was very critical of Washington's conduct during the war, and that got back to Washington. Because Washington had a lot of friends everywhere, and they were willing to tell him that Adams was saying this stuff. And Washington was a guy who was very proud, and he was dealing with very difficult circumstances, and he didn't like people carping at him. He wasn't somebody who dealt particularly well with criticism. And so knowing that Adams had been basically on his case behind his back, you know, as you move into the presidency and then Adams becomes Washington's vice president, you know, Adams is not really brought into Washington's inner circle. They're polite to each other. They're cordial to each other. But Adams is never a major figure in Washington's inner circle. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Washington kind of had a grudge against Adams. And then Adams rubbed a lot of people. John Adams rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. But yeah, I think that's really why there was a distance between them. And then as he's going around setting precedent after precedent after precedent as the first president, one of the precedents he definitely sets is the vice presidency is a big nothing of an office, you know, famously described as, you know, not being worth more than a bucket of warm spit. And Adams realizes, you know, shortly into his first term in office that the vice presidency has no power. And that the only person who probably could have given the vice presidency any power was Washington. And because Washington and Adams were not personally close, yeah, the vice presidency is relegated to nothingness, until into the late 20th century.
From Thomas Daly, how aware was Washington about just how subversive Jefferson was when he was Secretary of State vis-a-vis France?
Washington was mostly in the dark until 1793, 1794. He didn't believe that Jefferson and then Madison too were actually running this shadow campaign against him or against his administration, mostly focusing on their shared hatred of Alexander Hamilton. But Washington was listening more and more to Hamilton. And so as Jefferson and Madison are setting up this, you know, the secret, you know, media campaign kind of against Hamilton and then through Hamilton against Washington, there's lots of evidence that Washington had no idea that this was going on. He didn't know that these anonymous letters or anonymous essays were actually being written by Madison and Jefferson. And he's still going to them asking for advice as they're sort of tearing him down. So he didn't realize it, the full extent of Jefferson's duplicity, and I think duplicity is a pretty good word for it, really until after Jefferson has resigned as Secretary of State. He starts to hear more and more stuff. And then by the time that Washington is resigning the presidency, I mean, they're like, Washington basically hates Jefferson at this point. In part because, again, Washington's not great with criticism in general, but also just because of the way that Jefferson conducted himself, you know, being, you know, so sort of to Washington's face saying one thing and then just immediately going behind his back and saying something completely different. Washington had no truck with that. And so by the end, he's like referring to Jefferson as like that man, like that's the word that he's using, like that man at Monticello. So it takes a while. Jefferson is able to sort of fly under the radar there for a long time.
And then the last question, which I'm going to pose to you, Mr. Duncan, is from Philip Cameron. And he says, could he have really made himself king if he wanted?
I don't think he could have. But that's a good question. And as I'm sure we'll get into when we talk about the show, or we talk about him in the show, George Washington did not want to be king. There were people who would have made him king. There were people who encouraged him to be king, at least some kind of elected king, you know, very constitutional monarch sort of thing. Like we elect a king and that king then serves for life. There was some play at that, but you know, the entire war is this fight in part symbolically against monarchy. Although that is obviously a gross oversimplification, but for Washington to then try to make himself a king, I don't think it necessarily would have flown. I don't think that that would have been something that the country, having just emerged from this conflict, would have accepted. And then it's kind of a moot point because there was nobody who was trying to be less of a king than George Washington through his whole life. So you'd basically have to imagine George Washington being a completely different kind of person with a completely different personality to get this scenario where George Washington becomes king.
I hope you enjoyed that very short question and answer session with Mike. The Washington Show should be ready about the end of April, so check your RSS feeds then, or check iTunes around about that time. Now, don't forget, if you want to pose a question to another narrator of 10 American Presidents, you can do that by going onto our Facebook group. Simply go onto Facebook, search for 10 American Presidents, and that 10, the numeral 10. And you can go and join in the fun and the revelry there and debate with other listeners of the show about who is your favorite American president or anything of that ilk. Now, another thing I need to exhort you to do is to please write reviews on iTunes. That is the best way that I can get new listeners to the show. And quite frankly, I quite like reading pleasant reviews. So if you have a pleasant thought about the site, please go onto iTunes or Stitcher or another podcatcher and please go and write that review, because it really means a lot to me and it means that more listeners get to hear about the show. Also, you can find me on Twitter, where we are 10USAP. So please go on to Twitter, follow us on Twitter, and feel free to tweet us. You can tweet me personally at Roy Fields, that's R-O-I-F-I-E-L-D. I think that's about it. As I said, The Washington Show, where Mike goes into things in much more detail into the life of the first president, should be with you just about the end of April. So I'll see you all in about 3 to 4 weeks' time.
Mr. Pop.
That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
47 years ago,
when in the course of human events,
and so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
There is not a black America and a white America and Latino America and Asian America. There's the United States of America.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.